listening to the Defenestrate Media Network.
The world's greatest podcast network.
Hey everybody, it's Jess Harnell, the voice of Wacko from Animaniacs, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, because you know what's good.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friend, on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
Hey, good afternoon. Your voice sounds really nice to me today.
Aw. At least you can hear it now.
Yeah.
Inside behind the scenes joke.
There. Yeah. Hey. Today is your birthday.
It is my birthday.
The anniversary of your womb liberation.
Indeed it is. It's my birthday broadcast, folks.
Welcome to it.
Yeah, welcome to it. How's your week been, Mr. Bell?
You know, I wanted to say, well, all I've done is work, but I actually went out into the world twice this week.
Yeah.
I went and saw the Brandi Carlile concert down at the Vivint Arena. The Indigo Girls were their opener, which is fucking great. I've wanted to see the Indigo Girls live for 30 plus years. And
yeah.
It sounded like hot garbage. And that bummed me out, but you know, still they closed with their set with Closer to Fine, and that made me happy, and I got to sing along. They did a lot of really cool classic stuff. And then Brandi Carlile,
you me and Mike Robinson sitting in my bedroom in college. You guys had your guitars and stuff, and I had like a harmonica, and we were trying to do Closer I Am to Fine. I remember that was fun.
It was fun. It was. And then Brandi Carlile was fucking perfect.
You guys were
perfect.
Far more talented at doing play at recreating the music than I was with a harmonica, but still it was fun.
Not for nothing, but you know, Mike and I were not bad.
No, you were not bad.
No, which is weird, but so yeah, Brandi Carlile was fucking great. Was awesome. And then went to work the next day, and then yesterday went and saw the Utah Symphony do the score for Jurassic World while the movie plays. I don't know if you've been to one of those before.
I have not. It's an interesting idea.
It's fucking great. Sometimes they have to throw subtitles on because the symphony doesn't have a volume control. And so sometimes you can't hear the dialogue, but made the movie better. You know, it really did. Mm-hmm. It was pretty interesting. I think I'm going to, I will, I mean, I love the symphony. I go every chance I get, and I can't go very often because I can't afford it. But when we used to go as elementary school children, you know, most of the kids just didn't give a shit, and I was as happy as could be. So it's always nice to walk in there with those fucking, that weird glass balloon animal sculpture thing that's been there for 100 years. Whatever the fuck it's all about. Still don't understand it.
I don't know. I don't know.
But yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I have no idea. Yeah.
Big, glass, delicate, terrifying. Nope. I don't know if it's pretty or not, but it sure is interesting to look at. Yep. But yeah, so I went out in the world a couple times this week, and Tiffany made dinosaur jokes, which is funny, and because I'm old. But
yeah,
again,
yep,
I'm not as old as you.
No, you're not.
Nope. Which is fine. It's fine.
I have three ish years on you, right?
I think so. You're 69, I'm 72.
Yes, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, just for shits and giggles, if this will work. Yeah, never mind. It's not going to work.
Okay.
Everything's fucked up today.
It's all fucked up.
It is all fucked up. How was your week?
Interesting this week. I officially hired a new artist for Shell and Nun.
Oh, goody.
Which
you
is,
didn't tell me that yesterday.
Yeah, which is good and exciting. I am going to miss Greg.
Sure.
But he wanted to leave. I could do nothing to keep him, basically. I could not say the right words, nor, you know, could come up with enough money to keep him. So he's off to do his thing. Hopefully he and I will work together again on something he wants to do.
Sure.
I told him, I said, you know, maybe if Shaolin Nun's not for you, maybe you come up with an idea and you need somebody to write it for you. Bounce it off me. See if I'm interested.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, I'll write anything.
We'll write for food.
What did I spend 10 years of my life writing white papers and process documents and
yep,
all kinds of boring shit? It's like, no, I could write anything you want. just sometimes takes me longer if it's not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Like press releases and stuff. It takes me a little bit of time to get those composed correctly. But yeah, we hired a new artist. She'll be starting issue 4 immediately. I asked her if she could do that for me, the goal is to have the majority of the artwork done before we launch the Kickstarter.
Sure.
So that I'm not waiting 9 months to put out a fucking comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
cool. Was painful.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. And then on Friday I got word that a federal position opened up that I've been wanting to get. I was hoping it would open up that I could get it, because it's one of those, you never know how they're going to do it, but I knew it was available and I'm like, please open it up to everyone, not just to federal internal employees.
Yeah.
And I threw my resume in. I am overqualified for the job.
Good.
It would be an easier job to do and would put me in a more of a managerial / higher responsibilities kind of position.
Yeah.
Which is good. Now I just got to get, I got to convince them that they want me. I worked with every fucking one of them that, you know, I think that would make the decision. So
yeah.
I have to convince them that they want me to do the job and then hope that there's nothing that blocks me in any way from getting it. So
make sure you put on something pretty.
Yeah. So if you think of me, if you're listening to this, it was like 13 days from the day I applied was the application period.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he'll try to talk to me next week or not. He'll probably wait the 30. It's probably a government thing. You got to wait those 13 days for it to get all the resumes in and shit.
If there's a slower way to do it, that's the way to do it.
That's the way the government will do it.
Yeah.
But it would make me a federal employee. It would put me in a new pay bracket so I could actually start getting raises again.
Yeah.
And I would have benefits. Not free. I'm not a politician. I'm not in Congress. But I, you know, much better benefits. And I'd be a union member. I'd qualify to join a union, so I'd finally be blue collar. Working in a white collar job. Traditionally white collar job, I'd be blue collar. Weird that, but I'll take it. I've wanted to belong to a union for a long, long time, so
yeah.
Fingers crossed, eyes crossed, whatever the fuck you got to cross.
Tots and prayers.
Send me tots and prayers, and let's hope I get this, because it would definitely be a huge improvement on everything I've been doing. And I don't have to win the comic book lottery to, you know, continue
make an
getting
end
by.
Meet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I win the comic book lottery, I'm still not going to complain.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. In fact, a lot of people will win if I win the comic book lottery.
Yay.
I'll George Clooney that shit, you know? So anyway, let's, we got some obituaries and some Miller Watch. So let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
in a nutty as fuck story that I still don't quite understand what happened, Anne Heche has passed away at the age of 53. Not from natural causes, but from basically, I believe, driving her car into a house.
So the wreck into the house was so bad. I saw on Twitter that there was a fundraiser to help the woman recover, whose house she hit.
Yeah,
recover. It's like it hit a wall with this, where this woman had all these collectibles. I don't know what they were. I'm pretty sure they weren't the collectibles we like action figures and stuff. But apparently they were raising like $100,000 to help her restore all that.
Damn.
So it was bad. I mean, why she hit her, to my knowledge, they had no relationship or no knowledge of one another. She just,
yeah.
There was worry that maybe there was some kind of thing and she just put her foot down on the accelerator and couldn't stop. I don't know.
Yep. We don't know. All we know is that, that she's passed away and there's lots of rumors and I don't care to get into that.
Yeah, it was kind of a rough one to watch because I heard about the wreck. That was a couple of weeks ago. And then like last week, it was like she's not expected to recover. She's going on the donor list now, organ donor list. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yep.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John has passed away. Mm-hmm. Star of Grease and singer of Physical, which was the one that when I was a child and my mom, who listened to Olivia Newton-John a lot, would forward that song.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember how controversial that song was when it came out and how certain radio stations didn't want to play it.
I saw an interview with her where she was talking about the song. And it is a song about being naughty.
Yes.
You know, of coitus. And that, so she made the workout video.
Right.
To try and deflect some of the naughty of the song. And that made it worse. Because of course it did. It was an awesome fucking video. When that came on Friday Night Videos, I was very happy. I was like, yeah.
I love that video. I had the album as a young boy. I got the album. And I remember the interior when you open it up, it was her all sweaty and working out.
Yeah.
And I was very happy about that. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, that Physical was a big one for me.
So, yeah, ironically, she died the same day as the 42nd anniversary of the release of Xanadu, which was a movie she was in and a song that she sang. So
a very weird movie.
It is a fucked up movie. But what's his name was in it? Was it Astaire at the end? Danny Kaye? I can't remember. Somebody super famous.
Some famous dancer was in it at the end. I haven't watched it in decades.
Nor will I.
I remember when I watched it, I think I watched it on like HBO or something. And when I watched it, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is so weird. Why am I compelled to keep watching this terrible movie? It was awesome. I loved it.
I believe the answer to your question is tight pants.
Yeah, basically. And a lot of, and there was it kind of kickstarted the roller skating, or it was either a response to the roller skating thing that adults were doing back in the early 80s, or kickstarted it, where everybody started roller skating and like you had roller disco and shit. I can't remember if it came first or if roller disco came first, but it was just kind of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Weird thing.
Yeah.
And to go back to Anne Heche really quick, I just want to call out one thing she did that I thought was really cool. It's when she first hooked up with Helen DeGeneres. She was going to a premiere of a movie she was in. This was a movie that was going to kickstart her into potentially a bigger, much bigger career. And she let the people know she was bringing her girlfriend, Ellen DeGeneres, who had recently come out and, yeah, and freaked out the world for doing so, to the premiere. And the producers said, no, you can't do that. She goes, I'm doing it anyway. And they were actually ushered out before the movie ended, the two of them, and it tanked her career. And the thing is when she started dating Helen, Helen says, look, it's going to be a problem if you're when everybody gets to know you're everybody knows you're dating me. You need to know this.
Yeah.
And then when she said, yeah, the producers don't want you to go, don't want me to take you to the premiere. And she said, then don't. I won't go. You go. This is your career. And she said, no, I am not doing it. You're going with me. And that started that normalization, even though it hurt her career.
Yeah.
Even though it pissed everybody off, it pissed off all these producers. It started a normalization for gay relationships that is has brought us to where we are now. So if you're homophobic, you have Anne Heche to blame. But if you're like the rest of us, there's a little hero moment for Anne Heche right there.
Yeah.
Mind you, her relationship with Ellen DeGeneres didn't last, but you know.
No. No. I mean, have you seen Portia de Rossi?
Yeah.
So David McCullough, this one stings. This one makes me sad. Has passed away at the age of 89. Prolific writer, amazing historian. His first book in 1968 was the Johnstown Flood, and then which is the only book of his I haven't read. He wrote The Great Bridge, the epic story of the Brooklyn Bridge, The Path Between the Seas, the creation of the Panama Canal. Mornings on Horseback, the story of an extraordinary family, a vanished way of life, the unique child who became Teddy Roosevelt. Truman, which is my favorite of his books. Portraits in History, The Brave Companions, John Adams, 1776, which is my second favorite. The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris, The Wright Brothers, Pioneers, American Spirit. All just dense, thick, well-narrated histories. There are few authors that I have revered as much as I have David McCullough. He was just amazing. He lived a very long life. 89's not so bad.
Nope.
So
sad. Makes me wonder if they'll find a book or two.
I hope so.
You know, in his office still.
They did. Patrick O'Brien, who did the Master and Commander books that I love so much, after he died, he had like a third of a book typed out, and then the rest was written in longhand. And it was about half a book, and they ended up publishing the book, and he had impossible to read handwriting, and so I had to suss that out over the course of a couple of weeks. It's the longest it's ever taken me to read a fucking book.
They didn't want to type it. They just put his handwritten stuff into the book. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly as he left the manuscript is what they did, which was really cool. But at the same time, it still ended with nothing resolved.
Right.
Which was sad.
Because he really hadn't finished the book yet.
Yeah, not even.
But with McCullough, at least you've got, it's history that he writes about. So even any insights he could give into a historical moment, even if it's only 50 pages, would be worth reading. So,
Yeah, he was good. He's good. I'm going to miss that there's nothing more coming from him. Even though it's been a while since he's put anything out, but Mego, the Green Goblin figure, sold for a shit ton of money, $76,700 at a recent auction. The figure, released in 1975, was one of only two Marvel villains that appeared in the company's World's Greatest Superheroes line. The other was another of Spider-Man's foes, the Lizard. Yeah, that's a lot of fucking money for an ugly fucking toy.
There were a lot of unique things about it, like with when it came to Mego and Marvel's involvement with Mego, because they first got the license with DC, and they put out all these DC characters, starting with the superheroes, moving into the villains. You didn't get very many villains.
No,
I think there was. I remember having Joker, Penguin, and Riddler. I remember there was a Lex Luthor. I didn't have a Lex Luthor, but I remember there was a Lex Luthor. And I think there was probably a Brainiac. But I don't think there was anybody else in the line. But they did do all the other heroes, which was cool. But I recall, like, if a hero wore gloves, they basically were given these plastic mittens.
Yeah.
That you would lose very quickly, you know, as a kid. Yeah, you would lose those very quickly. They were given plastic mittens and cloth capes that would come off easily, that sort of thing. Because they were meant to be, you know, they had cloth costumes, you know, plastic boots, that kind of thing. And it wasn't with Marvel. They said, no. We don't want these weird mittens. So they actually did a molded hand glove. It would still come off. But it was a kind of a molded hand glove. It was built more like the boots were.
Sure.
And it was a really smart way to do it. And if they didn't do that, they insisted that, like with Spider-Man and Green Goblin and that they make their hands the color that their glove would be. So Spider-Man's hand was red to go with his costume. Creepy. So you could strip him off of his costume and he'd have a mask and red hands, you know.
Not bad.
Yeah, it was the idea that Marvel was basically saying, we don't want this look. We want it to be better.
Yeah.
And they made it better. They were the first to put real hair on certain male characters. Usually it was just molded hair.
Yeah.
But like Conan and Thor got real hair because they wanted to make sure they were famous for it. So they wanted to make sure that hair was there.
I have never, ever liked Amigo. I never have, and it could just be that they're a little older than me, mm-hmm. you know, and coming up for me, it was the 3¾ Star Wars toys.
Right.
You know, I mean, those were my first action figures, so.
They were the disappointment for me.
They're so
because
good.
I was a big Mego fan. I had Mego Star Trek, Mego superheroes, loved them. I still have Amigos. I got Amigo Scotty a while back, and
of course
I keep it on my shelf. But I remember when I got the Star Wars figures, how limited they were, you know, just four points of articulation, yeah. or 5 points of articulation, basically. And how Vader and Luke's lightsabers were molded into their hands so you could slide it out and stuff. And I remember I was always a little disappointed by that, and I was getting a little too old for toys when G.I. Joe came out, but man, was I excited by the fact that G.I. Joe had elbow and knee articulation.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was a big day in toys.
Yeah, it was. you actually put a bolt there. That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Ezra Miller, back in the news, has been charged and arrested in Vermont for felony burglary. According to the police report, Vermont State Police were notified of a burglary complaint from a residence in Stamford on May 1st. Police found that several bottles of alcohol were taken from the residence while the homeowners were not present. After collecting... Okay. Hi, dog. How you doing, buddy? He's just having a little yawn. Anyway, there were cameras in the house, and they basically watched Ezra steal all the stuff. Now, the problem is, as we move to the next story, police are still unable to locate the mother and her three kids who were staying with Ezra Miller in Vermont. He says that the family left the property 2 months ago, but he mm-hmm. thinks that maybe they are hiding the family somewhere else.
Well, yeah.
Hi, this is a dog crawling into my lap.
whether they're hiding, hiding the bodies or hiding the people, we don't know.
Yeah. I don't know why the dog is being so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, stop licking the microphone.
But this has been Miller Watch.
It has been.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that is also it for the news.
All right. Take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some moving pictures.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
We can share a love divine.
Hi, I'm Adrian Paul, and I'm listening to Hold 322, the world's greatest podcast.
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
So what have you been watching on the TVs and movies this week?
Well, other than the news, I've been doing a lot of news this week because I haven't had chunks of time. But I've been watching season 3 of The Umbrella Academy as often as I can stuff it into my fucking schedule. It started out strong. It's weird as fuck. I love this show with every fibre of my being. I just can't. I know I'm coming to the end of the season and I'm a little bummed out about it, but I like this show. If you haven't watched The Umbrella Academy, you really need to pick it up. It's pretty fantastic. It's over there on the Netflix. So, but you've got a fucking list of shit you watched.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I need to watch Umbrella Academy, but that's kind of one I have to watch on my own in my house, so I don't usually get a chance. But I did watch Prey first of the week, which
so good.
I got to tell you, I haven't enjoyed a Predator movie that much since the first one. So, and I, in many ways, it was superior to the first one.
Oh, I think so. I definitely think so.
I got a kick out of all of, I know that Jesse Ventura and I think Bill Duke have both complimented Amber Midthunder for her performance. Which is cool. I haven't heard anything from Arnie yet. Yeah. Arnie's more of a, I'll call you personally and talk to you about it. You know,
yeah.
I don't think Arnie messes around with social media, but yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We didn't have anything to watch the next night, so we decided to check out Lightyear.
Ah, I've been meaning to do that.
That was pretty good. I liked it. I mean, it's, you know, it's for kids. It's a cartoon, but it was pretty good. I quite enjoyed it. I went in with the expectation that this is written for the Toy Story crowd, you know, and it was really good. I enjoyed it. Then, of course, just catching up on things. Resident Alien is continuing its season. It's not a new season. The last episode dropped in May, and now we're finally getting the next episode. So they took a huge gap.
Yeah,
fucking sci-fi. I don't know what the fuck.
No.
But yeah, it took a huge gap, but it's back and just delightful. Just cracking me up. I've been watching Reservation Dogs. It's dropped its second season. So good. the spirit guide who shows up and gives them bad advice just kills me every time he wanders in. And that's fun when, cause on Resident Alien, you've got, the guy who plays your father. And he's also on Reservation Dogs. So it's just fun to see him in two different shows with natives.
I can't remember his name, but he is such a wonderful actor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really like it when he pops up in stuff.
I think episode 1 of season 2 Res Dogs, you get to see him sitting naked. Yep.
Just, I don't need it.
Yeah. But yep. It was just that moment of like, well, I've seen that now.
like Thor seeing Hulk's bits.
Yeah, it's kind of that moment. It's just, okay, well, there it is. What We Do in the Shadows. Oh, my God. The Wedding of Nandor. Fucking delightful. And then Harley Quinn, new season. Been watching that. And that's killing me. That's just delightful.
It looks brilliant. I've really...
This episode, they needed to talk to Swamp Thing, who is a hipster, which cracked us up. But in doing so, they first had to meet John Constantine, who's voiced by Matt Ryan.
Yay!
Yep, I was very happy. So that was my big watch this week. But yeah, I got a Matt Ryan moment again. And then just good stuff all the way around in television. And this week, this coming week, we get She-Hulk.
Yeah, on the 18th.
And then next week, we get the following week, we get Lower Decks. So, yay. Back to regular TV.
And we've got fucking Lord of the Rings popping up at the 1st of September, yep. Which I am very much looking forward to.
I saw solicitations for a trailer for Captain Andor. I want to say Andor.
Yeah, god damn, that looks good. We're going to talk about that in the news a little bit.
Yeah, something they had to do to help us remember. Oh, yeah, he's a thing. It's a whole thing.
Yep.
We just took too fucking long. Yeah. Yep. So let's do some news.
News it is. Let's see. We're going to start with Kevin Smith, who opened his mouth and let fucking genius fall out again.
Yeah,
I don't care if you like him or not. I am a huge fan of Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. So, he's basically going off on Warner Brothers for the baffling decision to cancel, you know, the Latino Batgirl.
And yet keep The Flash coming out despite their problematic co-star.
Yeah. Yeah, which on that one, you know, I'll just throw it out just to get it over with. But there's no actual news. There's just a shitload of rumor. But the current loudest rumor is that they're going to shit can the whole Flash movie.
Mm.
You know?
Well, if they can write off Batgirl and make $90 million a year, you know, and have a $90 million tax break for the next however many years, what can they get for Flash? You know?
Yeah,
let it die.
But it makes me wonder, is Blue Beetle okay?
So far, yes.
All right.
So is the Constantine reboot. They're both supposed to be still okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, Smith called out Warner Brothers for the baffling decision to shelve Batgirl, leaving the movie permanently unfinished and unreleased. Clerks writer and director claimed it was an incredibly bad look to cancel the Latino Batgirl movie, especially as the directors, Bilal Fallah, and Adil El Arabi have been on the rise and at the helm since 2020's Bad Boys for Life. They also did two fantastic episodes of Disney Plus's Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he said, I don't give a shit if the movie was absolute fucking dog shit, man. And I guarantee you that it wasn't. The two directors who directed that movie did a couple of episodes of Ms. Marvel, and that was a wonderful fucking show, you know. Great looking, and they had more money to do Batgirl than they had to do an episode of Ms. Marvel and stuff. Also, I love all the CW shows, and the CW shows have their budgetary constraints. And the big complaint they said here was, oh, well, it isn't big enough to be a fucking theatrical release, so it looked too cheap because it was a $90 million movie. How do you make a cheap-looking $90 million fucking movie, but if it looked anything like slightly better than an episode of fucking Arrow... Why couldn't we have seen it? It feels like there's more than just, we're going to save $20 million. Like, I don't know, man.
It was never meant for the big screen. So $90 million was an appropriate budget for it. You know, it was meant to go on HBO Max.
Yeah.
That was the original intention of it. It was meant to be a follow-up to Batman. It was even filmed in Glasgow.
Yep.
even the Scottish newspapers were saying, oh, Batgirl got canceled. The filmed in Glasgow movie Batgirl got canceled. Yep. Was in the Scottish newspapers. It's like, yeah, what the fuck?
And then his follow up is, that's the baffling thing. I don't give a shit how bad the Batgirl movie is. Nobody in that movie is complicated or has anything in their real life you have to market around. In mm-hmm. the Flash movie, we all know there's a big problem. Flash is the mm-hmm. reverse Flash in real life.
Maybe a little more Mirror Master than Reverse Flash, but I agree.
Sure. Yeah. So the Henry Cavill Highlander remake, which I thought was already greenlit, appears to be moving forward. In an interview with Collider, director Chad Stahelski shared the newest updates on the project, which is a reboot of the franchise from the 80s about an immortal Scottish warrior played by a Frenchman. Mm-hmm. While the creative team is allegedly still working on the script, it's largely complete. Quote, we're in the process of tweaking right now. I think we know what we want. More important than anything, we know what we want to make. It's in the creatives. We know what we're going to make. It's just a matter of getting it to the point where we feel, okay, this is it. Let's go. But we're closer than we've ever been, and that's good.
Well, it sounds like a budgetary thing, too. He's basically been told, We're not gonna put extra money into you shooting additional footage to decide what kind of movie you want to make. Figure out the movie you want to make. Get it down to what you hope will be the final edit, and then go from there. They've had Cavill on board from the very beginning, so that's
good. He's ready to go. J.J. Abrams' planned reboot of Constantine. Oh boy. Is reportedly safe amid the upheaval at Warner Brothers Discovery. That's claimed Batgirl. That's canceled Scoob, the Holiday Haunt. But despite, canceling Abrams' long in development sci-fi series, Demi Monde, in June, HBO Max remains in the bad robot business. So this take on Constantine, it's described as more horror focused than the NBC version, which will be good because so is the comic. But yeah, it's said to be moving along.
So that's fair.
John Batiste is leaving The Late Show with Stephen Colbert after seven seasons. I love that happy dude. You ever see that dude in a bad mood?
Never see him in a bad mood. Anybody who plays that thing that he plays can never be in a bad mood. It's such a crazy instrument. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like a horn with piano keys, and it's all synthetic, synthesized. I don't remember what it's called, but yeah. Anybody who plays that kind of instrument and makes a living at it and is successful, like jazz successful with it, he could never be in a bad mood. And I love John Batiste, so I'm going to miss him.
So he won Album of the Year at the Grammys this year for his album We Are. He was nominated against Kanye, Billie Eilish, Taylor Swift, Olivia Rodrigo, Lil Nas X, Doja Cat, Tony Bennett, and Lady Gaga. Justin Bieber. The most nominated artist during this year's Grammys. But he's Louis Cato, who plays with the band on the show, will be taking over as interim before becoming the permanent band leader on The Late Show.
What does he play? He plays as a keyboardist. Trying to find his list of instruments. Yeah, I know he plays keyboard. Piano, obviously.
Yeah.
But he plays that, I can't remember what it's called, but it's this funny little horn with piano keys on it. And it's all synthesized and everything. I just can't remember what it's called, but yeah. It's adorable. And that's usually what I see him picking up on The Late Show to, you know, as the band leader.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sad because I like him. Their interplay is always a lot of fun. You know, it'd be like Doc Severinsen leaving Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he did not do. Doc stayed, man. He stayed. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, Dave Letterman.
Paul Schaefer.
Paul Schaefer never left. They decided to retire together. So, yeah.
I believe they live on a farm outside of Indianapolis now, raising llamas and alpacas. Rogue One, the Star Wars, one of my favorite Star Wars movies, will be re-released in select IMAX theaters alongside an exclusive look at the upcoming Andor series. The first Star Trek anthology series film, Rogue One, serves as a prequel to the original 1977 Star Wars film, A New Hope. Mm-hmm. Details the Rebel Alliance's first real victory against the Empire that is referred to in the debut film's opening crawl. Set a week before A New Hope, the film focuses on this group of rebels who, in their mission together, steal the plans of the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's a great movie. It's a fucking great movie. Yeah, and I think it's been forgotten. A little bit. At least in my own mind, I've like forgotten about it. And so when they announced the Captain Andor series was coming, I was like, oh, fuck yeah. That was a whole thing. I remember being really excited for it until we've gone through all these other shows, you know.
Yeah.
Since then.
I mean,
The Melodica.
Yeah.
That's what Baptiste plays. That was bugging me. Yeah.
I'm glad you found it.
Yes.
On the other hand, also liked Solo. I thought it was just fun.
I thought Solo was fine. Yeah. I didn't have a problem with Solo.
In fact, the whole thing with the robot uprising was about my favorite Star Wars thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really did enjoy that. But, no, so, yeah, we'll be able to see it in IMAX, and they'll probably show the trailer to Andor. Mm-hmm. They're going to do something. Yeah. I'm guessing a trailer.
Well, you know, just make us remember, you know, get us back out to the movies for that. Help us remember how much we loved Andor and wanted to see a Solo thing with him. It's going to be awkward because we know how it all ends for him.
Yep.
When you watch Rogue One, but yeah.
Yeah, that is going to be. But that is it for the news.
All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
Hi guys, my name's Gigi Edgley and I play Chiana on Farscape and I'm the host of Jim Henson's Creature Shot Challenge and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Enjoy.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hey gang, Jeff here. This segment of the program is brought to you by The Nerd Store. The Nerd Store at the Valley Fair Mall in West Valley, Utah, brings you everything you need to complete your geek. The airlock to Epic, the Nerd Store at the Valley Fair Mall or nerdstoreutah.com.
We got a box!
What is it?
Oh, you'll see.
No! What's in the box?
Let's hear some comic book news.
Marvel has announced a Planet Hulk sequel.
Uh-oh.
On Monday, Marvel announced Planet Hulk Worldbreaker, a new 5-issue limited series. Allowing original Planet Hulk writer Greg Pak to revisit what many consider to be one of the greatest Hulk stories of all time. Well, there's only two, so...
Yeah, three. There's three.
We got Immortal Hulk. We've got Immortal Planet Hulk.
Planet Hulk, and we got the Peter David run.
Yeah, it's fair. I'll give you
that's
that.
Peter David, when Peter David did Professor Hulk and did his run... That was some of my favorite Hulk until Planet Hulk. And then Immortal Hulk was another one where I was like, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, the other ones were too short. Like the one with where Banner was the monster, basically.
Yeah.
The Hulk was waking up going, what the fuck did Banner just do this time?
Yeah.
That was fun, but it was like a limited series. It didn't run for more than, I think, 6 issues. And then the writer and artist left.
Yeah.
I like Epics. I like Planet Hulk. I like the Peter David run, with Dale Kuhn. I liked Immortal Hulk. So it'll be fun, but I'm glad it's Greg Pak and all that. But yeah, I was hoping that this whole, the Hulk is a spaceship thing, you know, to take him off world. And then he winds up at Asgard.
Yeah.
I was hoping that it would eventually lead to him going to back to Planet Hulk, or he can't go back to Planet Hulk, but going to something like Planet Hulk.
Yeah. It's, Hulk number 8 drops mm-hmm. this week, which I believe, ends the Banner of War story. Mm-hmm. I think this is the last one. So we get to figure out how Spaceship Hulk figures out. I don't know. It's Donnie Cates is a genius, and sometimes geniuses just shoot right the fuck over your head.
Yep.
Yep. Marvel has made another change to Punisher's origin. They've been making a lot of big swings and some major changes to the canon of Frank Castle's life. At the core of the comic is that Frank put away his trademark skull logo and frequently used firearms and is on his way to becoming the Fist of the Beast and the mm-hmm. primary enforcer of the ninja death cult, The Hand.
Yep.
Yep. You know what?
It won't last, but the change they got, I mean, obviously one of the changes they got to make is eventually he can no longer be a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be a little old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the rest of it's full of spoilers. If you want spoilers on it, pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and read the rest of that article. DC's Poison Ivy miniseries is getting a second story arc. Not so much a continuation as, okay, here's 6 more. Let's see if you guys can try not to fuck this up. That's really it. That's the story. There's a lot of paragraphs and a whole lot of words. Fans demanded it. It's written by G. Willow Wilson. The 2 that I've read so far are fucking great. If you get a chance to go and pick that up, pop into your local comic book shop and see what you can find. Alyssa Wong and Martin Cocolo are launching a new Deadpool ongoing series. It's been more than a year since the last Deadpool title came to an end from writer Kelly Thompson. But if there's one thing you can count on from Marvel, there's got to be a fucking Deadpool title.
It's more Deadpool, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's coming.
Well, they probably pitched it around, you know, shortly after Kelly's run was ending. And Marvel was like, well, we're just not getting the readership we wanted to have. And then Wong and Cocolo probably pitched it, but they had to wait for them to get a certain number of issues done, you know, ahead of the game so they could release it. So It's been a while, but for Wong and Cocolo, they've been working on it ever since Kelly Thompson left. So,
yep.
Yeah.
So this is out in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty it. That's it for the comic book news.
All right, well, let's talk about what you've been reading this last week.
Picked up Batman 126 to continue the Zdarsky epic.
Yes.
It was good. That's all I can say. I
quite enjoyed it. I liked a lot of the things he had to say, and I was really happy about the ending.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, I'm like, okay, Grant Morrison, here's how you bring back canon, you know, bring back old weird ideas and make it canon without making it, you know,
stupid.
Making it stupid, yeah.
I read Predator number 1. Mm-hmm. Ta-da. Great premise. Fantastic fucking premise. I'm not going to blow this story for anybody, but worth picking up. Much better premise than Alien number 1. You know, because Alien number 1 is basically, hey, we're in space. Ah, my face is being hugged and mayhem ensues. This yes. much different, coming from a completely fucking different direction that you have never seen mm-hmm. before. And then I picked up my copy of Preludes and Nocturnes and decided to read some of that. Mm-hmm. That was just yesterday, so I'm not very far. But it is, as I recall it, good.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's the, yeah, it's basically the Sandman series.
Yep.
The first part of it, first half of it, gets you up to The Sound of Her Wings, but only half of that episode is the comic book part of it, because the other half of the episode is Men of Good Fortune,
yeah.
which is somewhere in the middle of a Doll's House, of the Doll's House saga.
Yeah.
This is kind of a little interruption Gaiman intentionally put in to kind of get people, you know, keep people in anticipation of what was going on with the Doll's House story. Yeah. Love Preludes and Nocturnes. I too picked up, I had to get a couple more graphic novels, just because my family was like, we need to read these. And I'm like, okay, I'll go get the collection. And then realized, oh, I never did buy the Kindly ones in graphic novel format or in trade paperback format, because I had it in floppy and I didn't like the artist. So I didn't care about getting it.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
like I got The Wake, which was the follow-up of the Kindly ones. And I got I bought other Sandman trades and some couple of graphic novels as well. Interesting enough, I had an argument this week on a Sandman group on Facebook with somebody who said that they disliked that people referred to these as graphic novels because they were comic books. Now, Neil Gaiman said, I always wrote graphic novels. And I'm like, yes, but they were published as comic books. You wrote them like comic books.
22
you wrote
pages.
Comic books. Yeah, you wrote comic books, Neil, because you put an ending at the end of each one of those issues. Even though it was a ongoing long story arc, and you did do several one-offs that were fantastic, like Calliope and Dream of a Thousand Cats, The Sound of Her Wings, Men of Good Fortune, Orpheus, all those were standalones, and they were fucking amazing. So, no, you may think you write graphic novels, you write those. And somebody was like, I was like, you know, and somebody was like, I know it's pedantic. And I'm like, well, my pedantry comes from calling them graphic novels when they're really traits. And somebody tried to argue with me. And like one guy was like, well, you're close. And I'm like, motherfucker, I write these things. I know what I'm talking about. But another one was, they were arguing. And I said, well, you got to think about it this way. A graphic novel is a movie. And you may have a whole shelf of movies, and you might go buy a season of a television show, and it may come in the same kind of case, and you put it up on the same shelf with your movies, but you would never look at that and go, that's a movie, because you'd know that was a TV series. And that's the difference between graphic novels and trades. Graphic novels are meant to be contained within their book, whereas trades were originally episodic. And now we're bound together under a common theme. So that was my pedantry on Sandman.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been reading?
What did I read? I read a lot of Sandman before I finally got to the comic book store to pick up my hold. But I was reading because I was pulling out the collection. I'm like, I want to read this again. let's see. Picked up Terry Moore's Parker Girls, number one, from Abstract. Again, nobody draws women better than Terry Moore. I don't think you'd need to know a lot. I think that, you know, like you'd have to have been a big fan of, it helps if you've read maybe some Strangers in Paradise, but I don't know that you need it. It kind of picks up in a mystery. And is really, really deep. And I like where he's taking. I like where he's starting it, and I can't wait to see where he takes it. Picked up 007 number one. This is the newest James Bond one that they had to rename so that just to frustrate comic book store managers. It's
fucking
like
ridiculous.
Mr. Bell. Bond is on a mission. You think he's going to succeed, and it gets blown. He gets out of it, makes it back home. M puts him on leave, and he's like, "Why?" You know, he's like, "It wasn't me. The intel was shit. I got, you know, there were more people there. This was obviously a setup. We need to investigate it." And M's like, sorry, 007. Somebody has to take the blame."
Yeah.
And so Bond's pissed. And then he gets contacted by who we find out was a former mentor of his. And yeah, it looks like a very interesting story. And I'm happy with that one's beginning as well. Peter Milligan's Sacrament, Religion in a Weird Science Fiction World. A very weird kind of, and religion is like frowned upon to the point where if they catch you practicing religion, they'll take you to a re-education camp where they remove the part of your brain that accepts religion as you know, as something. Yeah, it's kind of and this one priest, he's like, he's really burnt out. He's like, "I really hope they do catch me because I would love to have that part of my brain removed so I don't have to do this anymore."
There you go.
Because he really feels compelled that he has to do it because he believes so well. And they've adopted, like, instead of taking the sacrament with the Eucharist, the new Eucharist is basically a device that they put on your forehead that hits that part of your brain that then stimulates that part of your brain so you get this elation.
Yeah.
And he's constantly doing that to himself. Like, it's like he's masturbating. He's just constantly doing that to himself anytime he needs a break. It's a very interesting character, very interesting twist. And apparently he's a bit of a randy priest as well. So, and then he gets taken to this, at the end of the issue, he's taken to this planet where someone's doing some evil shit. And they want to know, is this religion based? And can you do anything about it? Which is, he's like, "Why am I not in a re-education camp?" Just when I think I'm out, they suck me back in. New champion of Shazam. I picked this up because of Doc Shaner's artwork, and I'm very happy with it. Mary, I can't remember her last name.
Shazam.
yeah. Her civilian last name. She, so apparently in the last issues of Shazam, Billy merged with the Rock of Eternity. And to do, you know, in order to save the world, he had to merge with the Rock of Eternity. All of the power of Shazam went with him. So Mary, Freddie, the rest of the Shazam family were all, you know, the rest of his family were no longer had powers.
Yeah.
Could no longer call upon the power of Shazam. Mary has taken this as an opportunity to figure out who she is, and she's about to start her first day in college at Vassar. So she's got the brains as well. And she's got two new roommates and everything. Roommate's got a rabbit. The rabbit starts talking to her. Tells her, no, Billy wants you to be the new champion of Shazam. You're about to get the power of Shazam. And she's like, you now have the power of Shazam. She's like, I don't want it. I don't want to do it. There are other people. Give it to, you know, you got Black Adam. Go have him talk to Black Adam. It's like, nope, sorry. Billy chose you and I can't he can't take it back. So, yeah, she winds up having to call on the power of Shazam and then finds out things have gone all kinds of awry for her in her life. So it's fun.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, Doc Shaner's artwork is amazing. So Ms. Marvel and Wolverine, number one. This is a three-parter that Jody Hauser's doing. You got Ms. Marvel and Wolverine. Next week we get that came out this week. Next week we get Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight, and then following that will be Ms. Marvel and Venom. These seem like just, you know, let's keep Ms. Marvel relevant by putting her with these other popular heroes. But the book is real. The issue is really good. It taps into a lot of the stuff going on with the X-Men. You actually see the X-Men for a minute. There's kind of this almost, you feel bad for Wolverine. You feel a little sorry for him. You know, Kamala realizes he's just super lonely.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's just this really cool story. And I thought, wow, thank you for making this compelling. I'm not looking forward to the Venom one, But now maybe I am a little bit that you'll make it cool. I hope. We'll see. Finally, Iron Man number 22. A good jumping on point. After the events of last issue, Tony and Rhodey discover that there is this whole thing, this company that's basically putting tech out into the world that is very dangerous. And they agree that the best way to deal with it is not to go in guns blazing or repulsors blazing, but to shut it down by buying it all. Even if it's going to cost Tony all of his money.
Okay.
And so we're looking at Tony Stark being poor eventually in all of this. And there's a fakey fake in it, and there's all kinds of cool stuff in it. I like that it's calling back to some early stuff, like the David Michelinie stuff back in the 70s and 80s. I like that. And it's calling it back without you having to really know exactly what they're talking about. They're just like, yeah, we knew this guy. He was always around, and then he was like that, he was gone. And it was like, and I'm like, yeah, but we, you know, those of us who remember the early adventures of Iron Man would remember all that stuff. So that's cool that it pays service to the fans at the same time, doesn't confuse new readers. So good jumping on point at Iron Man number 22. Mind you, going back to pick up some of the stuff that Cantwell was doing with this whole huge story arc with Korvac. Is worth it. But yeah, you could jump on at 22. And it's Return of the Stealth Armor, which okay. is fun.
Do you know what? I haven't been reading that title, but fantastic cover with that stealth armor that came out with that one.
Yeah, they get Alex Ross to do the covers. And he's been killing it with every single cover.
Yep.
You know, he's just sort of in his studio doing, drawing, you know, painting whatever he wants. And yet he gets these cover commissions. He's like, no, what's the story about? Okay, I'll paint that. And it's just beautiful. Just an absolutely beautiful covers. Yeah, absolutely. Love it. But today's Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. Let's give our picks of the week.
You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
What are you looking forward to this week, sir?
Joss, you go first. Oh my God, we have been without adult supervision this whole show.
Yes.
And have not lost our fucking minds. Now, I don't think that means we don't need adult supervision. I think she's got us trained.
She does. She has us well trained.
Yeah. I will start with mainstream picks. Batman, One Bad Day, The Riddler, number one, is coming out. I mean, because what the world needed was another fucking Batman title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's DC is worse with Batman than Marvel is with fucking Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you
going to do? Or Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then from Marvel, Hulk number 8, we're finally finished, I believe, with Hulk fighting Thor in his brain as a spaceship or something.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know. So we'll figure that shit out right there. How about you?
For me this week, from Marvel, this is both for Joss and me. Daredevil number 2 will be coming out. This is a bigger deal than it should be, because it also hits like a anniversary issue for Daredevil. So it's going to be double sized, just like issue 1 was. But this is Chip Zdarsky continuing post Devil's Reign.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed Daredevil number 1. So I probably am going to keep picking these up because I'm enjoying them. So I get Daredevil and Batman now from Zdarsky. Nightwing, number 95. Another high-flying guy who uses the scream of sticks to fight with.
Yep.
I'm hitting that point because Tom Taylor's work on this is so good. It's almost like not having Saga or waiting all month for Saga to come out when Saga's coming out. Nightwing is becoming that for me. It's like I look forward to reading Nightwing every month, which I never thought I'd say.
Yeah.
I look forward to the dick every month now, thanks to Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo, whose artwork is killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. On my independent list, from Aftershock, Garth Ennis is bringing Jimmy back with Jimmy's Little Bastards. Jimmy, he's on extended leave from British intelligence. He's, you know, wearing carpet slippers, tragic sweater, and a cup of cocoa. He's even reevaluating his attitude toward women. Meanwhile, his daughter is taking up the slack, doing all the things that Jimmy was doing before. If you've not read the Jimmy stuff from Garth Ennis, it's James Bond as imagined by Garth Ennis. And the rogues gallery he has is even more ridiculous than James Bond ever had. It's crazy. You got a monkey with a brain, with a big brain, domed brain thing. It looks like Mojo Jojo, but he wears clown makeup because why not? You know? It's all kinds of crazy shit. I love what Ennis did with Jimmy. And so, yeah, you got an older Jimmy, and he winds up having to look into everything as well to help his daughter. It's just, yeah, it's going to be fun. From the guy who brought us The Boys and Preacher, this is some pretty epic shit as well.
Yep.
And from Image Comics. Just because, man, The Last Shadowhawk number one. In the not too distant future, the world will be just as it is today, only worse. No shit.
Yep.
No shit. Evil has permeated the very fabric of society, from the halls of government to the darkened alleyways. I'm like, are you sure you're talking about the not so distant future and not right fucking now? Will the heroes who once defended the downtrodden fail them now? Will a new generation rise, inspired the last of the old? Who will be the last Shadowhawk? So Shadowhawk, sort of a Batman-ish character, lives in the same world as Invincible, but was one of the superhero properties they tried to do in the early days of Image. Was mostly an art thing for a long time, but Philip Tan's writing this, so we're going to get a little bit better story behind it all, and I think it's going to be worth checking out just because of Philip Tan for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, could be cool. And I mean, he looks like Shadowhawk. It's got the Shadowhawk look and feel and everything. And so, yeah, let's see where they go with that. How about you? What are your indie picks?
From Image Comics, Shirtless Bear Fighter 2, number one.
Yes.
Shirtless Bear Fighter is pretty fucking funny, so yep. I'm looking forward to this. The War on Bear Roar. From Titan, Sherlock, A Scandal in Belgravia, Part 2, Number 1. I actually read Part 1. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a while back, but it's written by Stephen Moffat and Mark Glass, or Gaddis, sorry.
Mark Gaddis. Was Scandal in Belgravia. Wasn't that one of the episodes they did?
Yeah.
As well? Or yeah. So it's basically retelling an episode in comic book format, which is cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So looking forward to
it's
that.
It's the illustrated episode, as it were. Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's it. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, I think we're all done. Is that right? Join us this week on Patreon. There's some shit going down at Valiant. We're going to talk about it. What the hell's going on at Valiant?
That's true. I'm also throwing in a last-minute article. I'll shoot over to you here in just a minute. About Eagle Moss, my least favorite model company.
Weren't they going out of business?
That's what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to be talking about that as well. So, basically we're talking about failed businesses over on Patreon, and you should join us and be part of our Patreon squad. We drop new and interesting things every week, or try to be interesting every week on Patreon. It's an extra episode, and you get it by joining our Patreon squad. For as little as $5 a month, you help support the channel, and you keep us, at least in some coffee for making this episode work, making these episodes come out. So, join us on Patreon, patreon.com/defendmedia. Join us, please. Be part of the squad.
Squad.
Yep. And I will say, as I always do, until they take the husk of a dead celestial, bring it back to life to stop the eternal war, and then it acts just like a celestial, make mine marvel.
You're always saying that. You're always saying that.
Always.
I mean, geez, we're getting sick of hearing about that. Well,
for Stan.
For Asgard.